I'm Alice Gray and welcome to Inside the Petri Dish, the podcast that dissects science and takes a look down the microscope at controversial topics within research. For International Women's Day, we are sharing and celebrating the stories of women in STEM. And today I'm joined by Nicola Faramarzi, a PhD researcher in cancer and molecular biology and a blogger. Thank you so much for joining us, Nicola.
Thank you for having me.
So first things first, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your research?
Okay, so I'm currently in my final year of my PhD, pre-write-up, so I'm still in the lab. I've not really had a really long career as such. I mean, I've gone straight from uni into a master's into a PhD. So, I mean, all I've ever really known is academia, and I did some clinical work experience as well. But since my master's, I've mainly had an interest in breast cancer. So I chose to follow that up with my PhD. And my PhD is basically about identifying genes which drive a cancer forward, genes that are mutated that cause, you know, abnormalities in cell function or cell signaling pathways, which in the end push the cancer to grow more and more. So I'm trying to identify one or more of these genes and see what impact they have on cancer cells.
So is there a particular person or event that led you into science, do you think?
I don't know. I've always thought about this. I think since school, I was always kind of mainly interested in science, I guess. And for a while, I wanted to be a medical doctor. And then in uni, I took biomedical science, which was really quite broad because I didn't really get what part of biology really I liked with the human side of things. So I wanted something that was quite broad that I could kind of like study different modules, see what I was interested in. But yeah, I'm not sure. I've always just been really interested in science, and I was quite good at a few different things, but none of them massively grabbed my interest.
And I think that's something to note in itself, because it's so typical of a scientist's career, because you start off really broad and then you find your little niche. So you started off broad in biomedical science and you found a part of that that you enjoyed and that you were interested in. And that's the beauty of science, is that you get to follow your interests and obsess over something to the nth degree. So what things did you enjoy at school that led you into science?
Well, I was actually really good at physics, which is really strange. I don't know how, but I was pretty kind of, I just kind of understood that more. But I never really liked chemistry that much, but obviously I found biology just really interesting. So it was kind of that mixed with the fact that I had started thinking quite early on when I was a teenager that it might be cool to be a medical doctor. So it was kind of that proved to me that I was really interested in the human body.
I think it's lovely that it's kind of come in full circle in a way, I suppose, because you're working in cancer research, which will end up in clinic. So even though you aren't a medical doctor, you are influencing the lives of patients before it even gets to the clinic, because it's taking that idea of research from the lab bench to the bedside, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. I think, kind of, especially as a researcher, you kind of do forget that, and you have to, well, I have to consciously remind myself that anyway, that everything that gets researched down to, you know, if I'm in the lab day to day, I sometimes think, like, what is the point in this experiment? And, you know, why am I doing all these statistical tests that, you know, just don't really seem that important? But actually, they all contribute in the end to a patient in a hospital or a patient in a clinic.
Yeah, and it, I mean, it's all part of a bigger picture, isn't it? And that thing of solving the puzzle piece, and that's why I love science, because it's like solving a big giant puzzle.
Yeah, pretty much, and you kind of end up working together with just, I don't know, this whole scientific community that you don't realise that so-and-so's paper is going to fit with your research, and you kind of take bits from everyone else's research and amalgamate them, and then people do that with yours.
And so you've been running your blog, Fresh Science Blog, for a while now. What pushed you to start that?
Well, I started it just less than a year now, so I still feel really, really new. But I was kind of, you know, in the classic second year slump of PhD, where everything starts to get a bit hard. You're not new anymore. You're expected to manage your own time. Kind of, you're expected to be a little bit more independent. And I just started to feel a bit uninspired because I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do afterwards. And I'm quite a plan ahead person.
Yeah, I'm the same.
So I had started already in my second year thinking, ultimately, I need to have a job or something at the end of this. And I wasn't really sure where I was going to go. So I then took to Twitter, which I'd never really used before, and found this whole community of PhD students, which seemed to just give me like a second lease of life. And I just thought it would be really cool to be a part of that. But also, I do really enjoy writing. So I wanted to do something parallel to my PhD, which was a bit more informal, a bit more, you know, wasn't adhering to strict deadlines, that was sciencey, but also a bit more fun for me.
It's almost like you've kind of taken science into your own hands in a way, I suppose, because you were following these deadlines and writing to a strict format, and then by creating a science blog, you can do it for yourself in a way that you wanted. And that's so lovely. As you say, it gives it a new lease of life because you get to do it in a way that you want and in your own way, into your own schedule. Because when you're doing it as part of a PhD, you are having to tick a lot of boxes.
Yeah, for sure. And I think sometimes you do kind of feel exactly like you said, that you're ticking a lot of boxes. And then the more I was kind of reading things on Twitter and following different people, you, for example, the more I was kind of seeing how much everyone else was doing. Like, you make YouTube videos and people are blogging and writing for magazines and all of these different projects that I just hadn't even considered.
Do you think that adds a lot of pressure? Because I follow a lot of science bloggers and communicators online as well, and I sometimes find that I can't help but feel pressure, that they're doing the things that I'm not, and I think it's very symptomatic of social media in general, because we get to edit it, so it paints us as very busy all the time and that we're perfect. So do you feel the same way? Or?
Yeah, I think, well, I always said from the beginning to myself that I would try make my PhD the priority. And I think there is a tendency to be like, she's tweeting this all the time, like, I should be doing this, they post blog posts more than I do, their stuff's way more interesting. But I think what I really like about the kind of Twitter community is everyone's super duper honest. So they'll be really honest about having a bad day. They'll put out there the lab experiments that haven't worked, or the fact that, you know, they've missed their deadline and they're having to have an extension, things like this. So you kind of then just realise, no, they're completely normal, like I am. So I don't know, it's quite strange. It's not as much of a highly curated social media bubble than I think maybe other industries are, where you're only showing the good parts of your day.
And I definitely see that as well, especially when you look at different parts of blogging, like fitness blogging, where you were judged on something like your body. And whereas I find that in our realm of blogging, it can be quite cathartic to blog. You know, you can say, oh, this has gone wrong and I've had a rubbish day, and then someone messages you and says that the same thing happened to them last week, or even if they just say, oh, I'm sorry that you've had a bit of a rubbish day, it's been amazing to meet new friends and connect with new people like you, and connect with people from all over the world and within science and with people who have similar interests.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that this whole bubble that's kind of formed over the past, I don't know how many years, I don't feel like if I went onto Twitter a few years ago, there would be as much information out there for PhD students. I feel like that's a relatively new thing. That might be me being a bit naive, maybe, but I think the whole purpose of it is to just comfort everyone. I know that sounds strange, but a PhD is difficult, and everybody knows that. And I think that's the reason why everybody is so supportive of people that they don't even know.
Yeah, well, I certainly see PhD chat on Twitter opening up that conversation, and this is an amazingly powerful thing to see other people experiencing the same thing as you. And I completely agree with you in that it hasn't been around that long, really.
Yeah, I think it's really great, especially for people who maybe don't have as many people to go to, maybe in their uni, or I don't know, some people have really lonely PhD journeys. So for them to go and find that somebody's having the exact same problem with an experiment or something like that is really helpful.
So for the final part of your interview for International Women's Day, I was wondering if there's something you've learnt as part of your PhD journey, your career in academia, or even in your life that you want to share with people.
I think I would say, which is really difficult for me actually to remember, is nothing is ever going to be perfect. So if you're a perfectionist, which is great, I think sometimes you need to let go a bit. So I've learned with my PhD that no matter how much I try with my experiments, some things are out of my control, or sometimes I can't make my data completely perfect, or make that image completely perfect. And I think I'm starting to be able to translate that into other aspects of my life. And especially with a PhD, actually, it's as well as nothing ever being perfect, you're never going to finish everything. You're never going to complete your list. There'll always be something else to do, so you have to try and manage those expectations.
That's so beautiful that something from the lab has gone into your everyday life, and that's kind of the perfect way, I suppose, to finish our interview. So thank you so much, Nicola. I'm incredibly honoured to have you on as part of my podcast, and especially for our International Women's Day celebrations here at Inside the Petri Dish. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.